102.
Weekday mornings, 6 to 9.
For the curious.
Well, speculation continues then around whether or not we are going to reopen this economy and how far can we reopen this economy. Yesterday, we understand President Cyril Ramaphosa met with the Presidential Economic Advisory Council to discuss our recovery plan. There's a meeting scheduled, I understand, with premiers of the various provinces this weekend. So possibly at the earliest, we'll have that family meeting, I would expect, around Sunday or so, but it could be earlier. Nonetheless, let's talk now about the kind of economy we will be returning to. I'm joined by two experts on this, Dr. Miriam Altman, somebody who's been in the studio before. She's an economist. She's also a convener of the COVID-19 Economists Group and a University of Johannesburg professor, amongst the many hats she wears. We'll also have the CEO of Business Unity South Africa, Cass Kovadia, also a member of Business for South Africa, both of them on the line. Let's start with Professor Altman. A very good morning to you, Prof. Welcome back. We know, of course, and you and I have discussed this before COVID-19, this economy was facing enormous challenges. The pandemic has really made so much of that so much worse than it appeared before.
Oh, indeed. And thanks for having me back online. You know, it's great that that there's talk of opening further. If I can just say even one thing that needs to happen is that we need all boots on the ground to be engaged in making sure that workplaces are safe and transport routes are safe and that communities are engaged in making sure that everybody's adhering to the COVID protocols.
Absolutely. I think livelihoods matter, but obviously lives have to come first. But let's talk about, assuming all of that is in place, let's talk about the scenarios that we may be facing. I saw something you wrote in about May, looking at what might happen if we had had 65 days of lockdown, right? We're now sitting, I think it's 140 today. I'm not entirely certain, but I think we're thereabouts. We've obviously had this extended period of reduced economic activity. From where you sit, what kind of economy will we be returning to?
Well, if I can just come back to the first point that I was making, because that response that you've just given me is very common, and I need to come back on it, which is that I'm not. Of course, lives matter, but what I'm saying is, if we want to open the economy fully, get back to tourism and retail and properly and restaurants and all those activities that create jobs and especially jobs for youth, we need to make sure that we are all absolutely hands-on with making sure that these COVID protocols are in place. And the problem now is that business has done a great job in setting protocols and making people aware of what they need to do. But it's all about self-regulation in an economy that is not very good at complying with health and safety rules. And so it's really important that business particularly, I think, with government, be far more involved in generating information systems, support to every single space to make sure that people are complying, that they know what to do. It's not a small thing, and it keeps getting glossed over. The way that you've actually just responded to me, I find I get that response out almost every time that I raise this in every quarter, and I think it's our number one economic threat. Because the first priority in terms of the economy, just to make the link, is to open up as we're trying to do and not have to lock down again. And the one thing that we can do that's within our power, you know, we don't have enough test kits and there are some things that aren't within our power, but what is within our power is to try to make sure that everybody sticks to this behavior. I think you're aware that what the studies show right now is that there tend to be super spreaders. In other words, there will tend to be one or two, you know, small numbers of events or spaces where it goes out of control. And you never quite know where that's going to be. So it's really, really important that there be a lot more, much more hands-on and not just relying on the kind of self-regulation to enable that opening up and that movement of people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I have no quibble with you on that score. We're seeing, for example, spikes in other countries that thought they were over the worst of COVID-19. Right. So at no point can we rest on our laurels. Let me bring now Business Unity South Africa CEO Cass Kavadia. Very good morning to you and welcome back to our program as well. I want to take you on a point that was made by the Deputy President of Business Unity South Africa, Martin Kingston, who says we're potentially looking at a wasteland in terms of the economic future ahead of us, the ramifications of COVID-19, but also all the other issues that we were dealing with even before the pandemic mean that we may have reached the end of the road. If we don't fix things and fix them with urgency, it may just simply be too late.
Yeah, thanks, Mangani, and thanks for having me. And hi, Miriam, how are you? Look, Martin is correct. I think that we need to appreciate that while the impact of COVID has been severe, we need to appreciate that we were in a recession pre-COVID. Business through BUSA has been engaging with government for a number of years on some of the critical interventions that need to be made to enable us to actually put our economy onto a sustainable, inclusive growth path. In the early days of COVID, we were downgraded by Moody's, so we essentially in a sub-investment grade rating at the moment. And COVID exacerbated all of that, and COVID made more stark the problems in our economy. So I agree that as we open up our economy, we need to ensure that protocols are in place, and certainly to be Business for South Africa, we've been working with government, with other social partners at NEDLAC. We have a NEDLAC rapid response task team every Tuesday morning where we actually pick up issues, but we also ensure that we're working together to communicate, to get through to businesses, to get through to citizens, to ensure that health protocols are adhered to. But we also need to ensure that government has the capacity to actually monitor that and if businesses are not adhering to that, to ensure that the things are falling through the crack, they actually pick those things up.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that we have to open up. There's no doubt that we have to have health protocol in place. But from our point of view, there's also no doubt that we need to start making the necessary interventions to ensure that it's not just opening up post-COVID, but rebuilding and ensuring economic recovery on a sustainable basis.
Absolutely. I think it's in the interests of everyone, businesses, as well as all citizens, really, that we do so safely. Prof Altman, let me bring you back into the conversation. There are so many unresolved challenges that we haven't dealt with necessarily. And even when we have a policy to deal with those, we haven't necessarily always implemented them. Let me just talk about a number of things that perhaps are easy to point to. We've had policy inconsistencies around energy, right? Whether we're going renewable energy or even nuclear power. We haven't had any clarity around the delays around the sale of spectrum, for example. Those are two examples that we could deal with certainty and clarity very quickly. Has, in a way, the pandemic bought us time to think about those more clearly? Can we expect announcements that are going to be implementable soon, or did it just put a pause button on everything and we are restarting again back to where we were 6 months ago?
Well, I think government's been active through this period. I'm not sure, you could say it bought us time, but I don't think so. We were so far behind the curve of where we needed to be in terms of our deadlines. You know, when you raise the spectrum story, the real issue is not just issuing spectrum, as you know, but it's digital migration to make the to make more spectrum available. In other words, getting the broadcasters off the sub-gig spectrum. So that was meant to have been done by 2015. So I don't know that you could say it bought us a few months' time, but I mean, we're just way behind the curve on energy. We were supposed to, you know, the national plans in 2012 said that we were supposed to procure 20,000 megawatts of energy, over this period, and move to renewables and put power plants to bed. So I think André de Ruyter is getting moving. And I think what's heartening is that he has just announced that he, is wanting to fast track that process now, I presume, of getting a transmission company set up. But I think coming back to, I know that it's more satisfying to say what needs to happen. In other words, we need to reform energy markets. We need to do a whole range of things. But the critical issue is the capable state, is that we've lost enormous capacity in the state over the past decade. That's had the effect of destroying capacity in the economy as well. And so, in fact, the most important thing that people should be focused on right now, and I don't know if it sounds abstract, but it is so critical, is that we have effective leadership and capacity in key locations in the state. And so what that means is, like putting André de Ruyter as CEO of ESCOM is a fantastic first step. Then he's got to be able to round out his executive. Then he's got to be let alone in terms of the politics, and he needs a strong board. And he needs to be able to get on with it, and he needs to be in the job for more than a year, because we've had 10 CEOs over the past decade. Similarly, process and administration. Transnet, there's a new CEO, Portia Derby. All the best to her. And she needs the same kind of environment that I've just mentioned. Municipalities. COCTA says that in their Back to Basics program, top six of municipalities should have certain capabilities. Well, most of them don't. So let's, pick the top 25, make sure that they migrate to those capabilities over the next 3 years. Because when you look at the economy, just to draw the link, municipalities spend 50% of their capital budgets, their capital budgets. It means that they underspend by half of what they could have been spending on maintenance, infrastructure, and so on. And that's why you start to see the water pipes bursting. I don't know. I mean, I'm happy today because I have power and water.
Yeah.
When people call me and they say, how are you? I say, I'm great. I've got power and water today.
Yeah.
Where we are. So now the problem is, now that's not directly a state capture problem. In other words, there is a problem of poor spending, but there's also a very big problem of underspending. It's a different sort of problem. Now, the NPC produced a report. All the reports, I'm a national planning commissioner. I'm just not speaking as a commissioner right now.
Yeah.
But I am still a national planning commissioner. And we've produced about 15 reports that are on our website. And one of them is on infrastructure. And where we focused every single report, it's an economic review. But every single report focuses on leadership, capacity, governance. Because if there's one thing that is missing right now, it is that in key locations. We should be asking more about who's going to do it than what they're going to do. There's way too much weighing in on the detail of what everybody needs to do.
Right.
And not enough on, do we have that CEO that is going to be eating, sleeping, dreaming, driving to a result? That's what you need. You don't need to know exactly what they're going to do. You need to know that you've got effective and stable leadership in place
to be able to effect all of those plans. I appreciate that perspective, Professor Altman. Casca Vardy, I'll let you round this discussion off, perhaps with a comment on the cancer of corruption, because to compound what we've just heard from Professor Altman, one of the big issues and really perhaps the low point of how we've dealt with this pandemic is how often and how much and how extensive corruption or at least irregular spending seems to be a problem within the state.
Absolutely. I think that the cancer of corruption, as we all know, is not only now. What's happened during COVID just sort of reflects that as a society, we seem to have lost our moral compass to actually root and seize during a period when people are dying during a period when we need all the resources, the limited resources we have available to be put to good use, is just unconscionable. And I think that firstly, at the highest levels of leadership across society, we need to condemn corruption. I think we need to come together as society to actually expose those who are corrupting. And the state needs to actually plow resources into, instead of wasting resources, instead of putting resources into projects that have neither social nor economic benefit, to put resources into the criminal justice system so that they have the capacity to pick these things up, to investigate quickly and properly, to build strong cases quickly and properly, take those to court, and if people are found to be guilty, to actually put them into jail.
Yeah.
We've got to move very, very quickly on this. We've got to demonstrate to all of society that we cannot, as a country, tolerate this, and we are absolutely determined to act against it.
Action, action, action. I think that's the theme of both of your contributions this morning. Very much appreciate those contributions from Dr. Miriam Altman and Cass Kavadia.